Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Boston blows out Milwaukee in game one. Then they get smacked in four straight. Denver beats Portland by 26 in game five. And then Portland beats them by double digits in game six. And then you've got Toronto and Philadelphia. The Raptors win that first game by 13. Everybody is rolling in with their Philly can't win in Toronto takes. Then Philadelphia wins game two in Toronto and then blows Toronto out in game three. And that's all about how Kawhi's got 1 foot out the door. And guys like Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol are washed up. And Philadelphia is going to give Milwaukee hell in the conference finals. But then Toronto wins the next two games. And then it's time to break up the Sixers. Everybody's saying how bad Philadelphia's chemistry is. That Joel Embiid is overrated. That Ben Simmons might be better off as a center or on another team altogether. And then comes last night. Philadelphia 112, Toronto 101. So now it's time for everybody to take a seat and shut their mouth. If the playoffs have taught us anything, and pretty clearly they haven't, but if they have, it's that you can't jump to any conclusion after one game. Ask Paul Pierce. Ask anybody who thinks you can. Not even after a couple of games. Hell, if the Blazers listened to everybody outside their building after last season, this team would not be where they are right now. But back to Philly, because that's where the Sixers were last night. And that's where they went off last night. Earlier in the series, Sixers head coach Brett Brown tried to give Jimmy Butler a new handle. James Butler. James wasn't having any of that. The fact is, the old one's just better. Jimmy Buckets. Jimmy Buckets was in the building last night in Philly. You knew he had something special working when Buckets showed up to work in a minivan and stirrup pants. I mean, is this dude for real? I know Butler's a little bit different, but is that guy for real? When I first saw that, I thought that had to be a Photoshop. I thought Denlesks somehow got in there and started doing Denlesk-type things. I mean, who's got the gonad, the audacity, the stones to pull off that look? This guy got out of a minivan in stirrup pants before the biggest game of the year. I mean, that's some serious heat right there. You do that, and what you're telling the world is, I'm here. I got this. Let's do this. And he did. He only had 25 last night, but I say only because it felt like 40. He had a huge impact, especially in the first half when he had 19 and was doing things like this.
Jimmy Butler for three. This would be large. It's off the front. Butler got his own rebound. Fouled by Lowry. Put back in. Oh, man. Jimmy Butler going to the line. He took the hit and made the bucket. And now emotions for the crowd. Let me hear you.
Sixers radio. This guy was doing everything, everywhere, including setting up Ben Simmons for this.
Butler with the ball. Two-man game with Joel. Goes away from the screen, into the lane. Lobs it to Simmons, and Ben Simmons crashes down with a two-hand jam. Great feed by Jimmy Butler.
Speaking of Ben Simmons, how about this stat line? 21 points, 8 boards, 6 assists. Now, is this guy perfect? No. He'd be the first one to tell you that. But was he garbage? No. He's not that either.
Garbage.
And they're not winning that game if that guy doesn't step up. He knew that going in. He stepped up when they had to have it. Philly got out. They were running. He was setting guys up. Philly was scoring. And we know this about Philadelphia, right? This is how they have to have success. By pushing the pace, staying out of those slow it down half-court situations. That's nothing new. We all know that. But that's where he is right now as a player, and that's where they are right now as a team. Everybody knew that coming into this series, and they know it coming out. And then Joel, who was taking a ton of heat, despite playing with like 15 different illnesses and injuries, he still went 17-12, and he had a plus-minus of 40. Nothing wrong with that, and especially when Joe is giving you moments like this.
Dennis guards Kawhi. He dribbles right around him, and Embiid blocks his shot. On the run out, Simmons, he's going to lay it up and in. Embiid with a block at one end, and Simmons like a freight train. Getting the layup.
Now that's Philly back to being Philly. Joel laughing, hitting dudes in the face. TJ McConnell breaking out the airplane. Jimmy and Joe back to their post-game comedy routine.
Get some rebounds and take off. That's just how the game went for us tonight. Home crowd was great. No boos. They booed us a little bit, right?
That did boo.
Okay, they booed us a little bit.
That did.
We appreciate it.
So Philadelphia got embarrassed. They were humiliated in Game 5, but they responded. season on the line. The guys who had to step up did step up. It's a man's game kind of performance. Would have been a lot easier for everybody to lay down and for guys like Butler and Tobias Harris to start thinking about their impending free agency, but they didn't do that. So what's going to happen in Game 7? Hell if I know. I mean, seriously. I mean, I know the numbers that favor the home team in Game 7. I know that Toronto pantsed Philly in Toronto in Game 5. I know that Philly has beaten Toronto in Toronto already in the series. So who the hell really knows? I also know this. There have been multiple times in this series when each team looked like a legitimate title contender. But other times when each team didn't look like they even belonged on an NBA court. So what I know is this. A lot of people who think they know don't know. That's for damn sure. So if you hear anybody telling you they know exactly what's going to happen in Game 7 of this series, keep moving because they don't. I'll tell you something else I do know. Toronto and Philly, Game 7. How about Masai Ujiri and Elton Brand? How about the two of these guys doing work? How about the two of them having their teams meeting up in a Game 7? Both bosses pushed almost every single chip to the middle of the table. The bet being, we need to win, and we need to win right now. The bet being, it's going to pay off this season. And for both of them, it is. Now they're both in a Game 7. The winner goes to the conference finals. I love that. Nothing but respect to both these guys for taking that kind of action, making those types of trades, being that aggressive, and not sitting back, not being complacent, not laying out. And now we're going to see who's got the better plan. Now we'll see whose plan will have them headed for Milwaukee. But I love the big swings that they both took. And now they're in a Game 7. Terry Stotts back in the jungle. Terry, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Jim?
Good, good. Good to visit with you, Terry. Thanks so much. So Denver got you guys pretty good in Game 5, but anybody who's paid attention, Terry, to you and your team knows that your guys would be ready and would respond in Game 6. So what was the mood like around the players and the coaches after Game 5 and in the buildup to Game 6?
Well, after the game, we knew we didn't have a very good game. Arguably our worst game in the last month and a half, going back to March. So we knew we didn't play well. It wasn't like Game 4 where we felt we let one get away in Game 4. We just didn't play well. And, you know, coming into Game 6, it was just very businesslike, very serious, knowing what we had to do. It was, to force a Game 7.
All right, so Denver then jumps out to a lead in the first quarter. How pleased were you with the way your guys came back in the second quarter and then how you sustained that in the second half?
Well, I was really pleased. Obviously, our bench had a huge impact on the game overall, but in the first half, they got us back into it. We fell down 10 early. They made some threes, but our bench really responded well. Zach Collins, Rodney Hood really got it going in the second quarter with some scoring. We tightened up our defense. I thought Evan Turner did a very good job defensively and run the team while he was in there. So they got us back on track, and then we were able to stabilize after that.
Yeah, the bench was huge. I'm going to go back to that in a minute. I want to ask you about Damian Lillard, because the interesting thing going into last night's game was this perception that Denver had bottled up Dame, even though he was still averaging more than 26 per game. I think it says something about the level that he's at right now that somebody might suggest that he was bottled up at 26 per. Like, how accurate is that perception to you, and what do you make of how he played in the first five games?
You know, I think he played really well. The problem was he didn't shoot the ball well, and I don't know. You always have to give the defense a little bit of credit, but I thought that he had some looks that he didn't finish. Unfortunately, when you're a scorer, everybody kind of looks at the scoring. And like I said, he didn't shoot the ball well, but I thought he played well.
Terry Stotts joining us. Then he broke out with 32 last night, including 17 in a third quarter, which included a couple of those logo threes. So when he's hitting those shots, how much does that impact the crowd, the opponent, and his own teammates?
Well, it impacts everybody. It's very deflating from an opponent standpoint. It gets the crowd into the game. I think it energizes our guys. Our defense seems to pick up when the offense is going well. Everybody seems to have a little bit more energy defensively. So, those are big momentum shots, and particularly in the playoffs, momentum is really important.
I understand that it can be a little frustrating, especially if you're in a hurry or you're running late, to find yourself at a railway crossing waiting for a train. And if the signals are going and the train's not even there yet, you might feel a bit tempted to try to sneak across the tracks. I see it all the time. Don't do it. Don't be that person, ever, because trains are going a lot faster than you expect them to be, and they cannot stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes right away, it can still take a train over a mile to stop. And by that time, what used to be your car is now just a crushed hunk of metal. And what used to be you, well, let's not think about that. The point is this, you cannot know how quickly the train is going to arrive. The train can't stop, even if it does see you. The result is a disaster. So if the signals are on, the train is on its way, and you need to remember just one thing. Stop, because trains can't. Blazers head coach Terry Stotts joining us again. Terry, you mentioned Rodney Hood. He'd had some tough stretches in the OKC series, but he's broken out in a huge way in this series, including the 25 he had last night. So what's been the biggest change, and what does it say about him that he did not fall apart after a tough series against OKC?
Well, you know, I think different opponents offer different things, you know. And against Oklahoma City, Dame and CJ, Dame was having a great series. This series, Rodney has a favorable matchup. He has a size advantage on some of their guards. They're putting their bigger guards on Dame or CJ, so he's been able to take advantage of some of those. I think the thing that probably for me was the confidence he's shooting the three. You know, he's good at one-on-one. He's good at getting the lane and finishing around those guys. But the way he shot the three confidently, he went 3 for 4 last night. That was probably the most encouraging thing.
We're talking to Terry Stotts. And Terry, you mentioned Zach Collins. You and I have talked about him in the past and about the growth in his game. Last night seemed like another milestone for him, both in terms of his impact at both ends. What's it say about him that he's playing huge minutes in the fourth quarter of an elimination game and making that big of an impact?
Well, it's he gives us something that we need. I mean, he gives us good rim protection. He plays with a passion and aggressiveness. The probably a good thing for him is that the playoffs can get physical, and so he doesn't get in foul trouble that maybe you would in the regular season. But he's had an obvious impact on the game at both ends. But his defense and his energy was big time. And as you mentioned, he's a young guy. He's 21, and to have this impact in his second year, playing in a game like last night is I'm happy for him. You know, it's as a young player, things can kind of go up and down, but it'll do wonders for his confidence, not only for Game 7, but moving forward.
Yeah, it would really seem like he's developing really rapidly. You know, I can keep running down name by name. There's C.J. McCollum. You mentioned Evan Turner, who had a big fourth quarter as well. I guess what I'm saying is I could pretty much go down the entire roster and find somebody who contributed. How big is it then for you as a head coach to get that kind of productivity from so many different places instead of having to rely on just one or two guys?
Well, you know, it's good for the team, and you got to – obviously, you win with stars in this league, and you need production from your best players. But, you know, I look at a game like last night where Evan Turner didn't take a shot, but he had 7 rebounds, 7 assists and impacted the game, played very good defense on Paul Millsap that kind of gets lost in all the performances last night. But for me, just finding a group out there that is clicking well. And last night we found it, and we were able to ride it.
So, Terry, there's nothing like a Game 7, right? I mean, these are the kind of things or the kind of matchups that set you up for the rest of your life, for better or for worse. From a coaching standpoint, how do you approach a Game 7? Do you try and keep everything normal and treat that like another game, or is it frankly just impossible to do so?
Well, I think everybody relies on their routine. You know, we'll go in, we'll have a practice or basically a video session tomorrow, and get on a plane and go, and we don't know what time we're going to play, but the thing is, I'm a big believer in routine and habits, and I think every player will approach it like that. But there will certainly be a seriousness to it. And, you know, I know coaches sometimes just wipe everything off the board and just say, go play. You know, we'll look at the tape and see if we want to make any changes. But I think you have to approach it as a normal game, but knowing that there's a lot more at stake.
Terry Stotts joins us for a few more moments. And Terry, earlier in the series for Game 2, you and your staff wore bow ties to honor John Yim, the team's video coordinator and player development coach, who was in a car accident. First off, how is John doing right now, and what has he meant to you and the entire organization?
You know, he and his family got out of the hospital 2 days ago, and it was, I don't know if you saw pictures of the vehicle, but it was amazing that anyone survived the accident, and the whole family, all four of them, survived. And so he was in the hospital for 2 weeks. He's out, and, you know, he's got some rehab ahead of him, but he's doing very well. And, you know, as far as what he gives us, he's one of those guys that everybody relies on, players, coaches, staff. He does a little bit of everything. He's very giving, hard worker, and, you know, you got people like that on your staff that you just very helpful in all kinds of areas. And so we miss him, but I tell you, it's he's certainly with us.
Terry Stotts joining us. I appreciate your thoughts on him. You know, over the course of the year, your team has faced so many obstacles on and off the court, and you just keep battling. In fact, have you ever had a team that was closer and tougher than this team?
I don't know. This team is pretty special. You know, we've had some good teams in the past few years as far as being close-knit and high character, but I think what we've gone through this year has certainly brought everybody a little bit closer. Even guys who are relatively new to the team, like Rodney Hood and Ennis, who came in February, are part of the fabric of our team and our culture. And they've come in, and it's amazing how everything has kind of coalesced together. And that's what would make winning tomorrow night, Sunday, even that much more special.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned culture. I was going to ask you about Ennis. I mean, for instance, what has he brought to it in terms of chemistry, and how does he impact your culture? What's it like having him around?
I tell you, I didn't know Ennis, but he's been a great teammate more than anything else. Everybody knows what he can do on the court, but he's been a great teammate. He's about winning. For a guy to come in here, basically, you know, obviously came here to help his career, and he's going to be a free agent. But he is about the team and doing what it takes to win games. And a lot of times guys in those situations are more concerned about themselves than what's going on with a new team that you don't have any connection with. And he is the complete opposite of that.
So, Terry, what about Game 7? As you think about this, in your mind, what is the key to Game 7?
Well, everybody's going to compete. It's going to be a long game, playing through the rough patches, keeping our composure, and knowing that you're not going to win the game in the first, second, or third quarter, and just trusting each other that when it comes time to win the game, that we'll find a way.
He is in his seventh season with the Blazers and the only current NBA coach, again, to win Coach of the Month at least once in each of the last six seasons. Now, Terry, I've told you this before, but I really do appreciate the relationship. I appreciate you coming back on, especially right in the middle of the battle. It's great to have you, Terry. Good luck this weekend.
As I've said, it's always a pleasure, Jim.
Listen, it takes more than hard work to make it to the pros. It also takes smarts, the kind of smarts that can read a defense and pick it apart. Now, hiring is no different. You need smarts to find the right people, but you don't need to spend years honing your game. You simply need ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. Try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. That's ZipRecruiter.com/CLONES. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Let me start, since Terry Stotts is coming up next hour, let me get in front of that. I've got the perfect word to describe Nuggets Blazers Game 6. One word, the perfect word. And that word comes from Seth Curry. More on that in a minute. Let me first set the stage for you. Remember, Denver smashed Portland by 26 in Game 5. They took a 3-2 lead. Portland coming back home, their backs to the wall, their season on the line. Question is, could Dame and CJ get going? Did they have an answer for the Joker and the Anchorman inside? Weird thing about Dame. Dame came into last night's game averaging about 26 per. Almost any other player and any other team would be hyped about that. But you know, Damian Lillard was not. And the way he's been playing, Denver was pumped that they had held him to 26 per game. But you know how that works. You know how it works with Damian. You can only hold this guy down for so long. It's only a matter of time before it's Dame time, whether you like it or not. You know, kind of like father time, tax time, Dame time. It's coming. It's just a matter of when. It's coming for us all. And finally, it arrived last night in the second half. In the third quarter, it was time for Damian Lillard to go logo lizard. And he did so with moments like this.
Cross-court pass for Dame. Dame with a head fake. Defended by Craig. 13 to shoot. Takes a couple of jab steps. Launches a long three and buries it from 30 feet.
Logo lizard doing that and then doing this.
Dame dribbles again. Top of the key. Another long three and another make. Dame time coming early tonight. And the Blazers lead by 5. 83-78. Lillard has 28.
Blazers radio. Hey, listen, those shots are only worth 3 points, but if we're being real, they're worth more, especially when they're chased by the opponent calling a timeout. That's what he wants. That's what Damian Lillard lives for.
Because I know how it feels being on the other side, you know, the visiting team, when the crowd is going crazy and you got to call a timeout, it's like you got to regroup. You know, you got to go in the huddle and have these conversations. So I guess that is true. You know, I look for those moments.
Quote, I guess that is true. I look for those moments. So he had 17 of his 32 in the third quarter. He was 2 for 2 from 30 feet for the game. An elimination game, of course, is the perfect time for Dame time. Point that I want to make, though, it was not only about Lillard. There was Rodney Hood coming off the bench, coming up huge with 25. He had it all working. Spot-up jumpers, getting to the bucket, Euro-stepping dudes into oblivion.
Turner dribbles to the low post, loses the ball, but picks it back up, double-teamed out to Rodney Hood. Out of the free-throw line, ducks through, switches up with the left, hand it in! Oh, what a move for Rodney Hood, gets the finger roll in the two.
He was unbelievable last night. He was not the only one. Zach Collins blocking one shot after another. How much better is that guy now? CJ doing what CJ does. Only problem, Denver kept doing what they do. They didn't roll over, and they kept coming. They kept coming like you knew they would, which is why this series is so good and why it's so tight and why we're going back for a Game 7 after Portland won. Which brings me back to how I started. The perfect word to describe a series. The perfect word to describe that game. The perfect word to describe what the series has turned into going back to Denver. And it all came from this incident in the fourth quarter.
Jokic runs into Zach Collins, an offensive foul! That's his fifth! And now Will Barton and Seth Curry getting into it, and Barton puts his face into Seth Curry's. Might be some punches thrown. I think I saw a fist. Will Barton and Torrey Craig were right in the middle of that. Now Evan Turner gets into it with Jamal Murray. David Vanderpool comes off the bench, as does Jim Moran. And for the third time in this series, we've seen a scuffle. That was definitely the one that was taken the furthest.
You think you saw a punch? I thought I saw an eye gouge. So what happened was the Joker was driving to the basket. Collins slides over to draw the charge. As Collins hit the deck, as anybody would when the Joker collided with him. And it took Collins into Denver's Will Barton a little bit. Seth Curry goes over to help his teammate up and gives Barton a little bit of a nudge in the process. And Barton wasn't having any of that. That Curry nudge was met with a Barton shove. Curry took a step back, probably surprised that somebody took any exception to him trying to help up his own teammate. Then both guys start walking towards each other, and then it's on. And by it's on, what I really mean is it's in, as in Barton's finger went into Curry's eye. And at that point, it was only the fact that Curry was being held back by his teammates that prevented it from being an even bigger incident. You don't put your finger in another dude's eye and not expect there to be consequences or repercussions. Four tees were handed out, but to me, the finest moment of the incident came after the game when Curry described the incident and the game and the series. He went instant legend with this quote. Seth Curry said, quote, "He waited for a few people to get in between us, and when a few people were in between us, he put his finger in my eye." You know what I'm saying? I can't allow people to put their fingers in my eye, end quote. That's the first part, and it's awesome. Like, he's calling out Barton for being a fake tough guy by waiting for people to get in between them before he started doing anything. And then he dropped this, quote, "I can't allow people to put their fingers in my eye." You know, like, yo, Barton, yo, man, you know I have a strict no fingers in my eye policy. Hey, man, read the sign. I don't make the rules. I only enforce them. But that wasn't even the best part. The best part was this part. Go ahead and roll it.
It's real sassy, you know what I'm saying? Like, they got a few sassy dudes over there, front runners.
Don't act like that's not amazing. Quote, that's real sassy. They got a few sassy dudes over there, front runners. This guy's like, damn, man. Those dudes? What do I think of those dudes? They're sassy.
Sassy.
I'm not sure I've ever heard an NBAer. Hell, I'm not sure I've ever heard a professional athlete of any sort crack some other professional athlete for being, quote, sassy.
Sassy.
But my guy did it twice. Man, they got a few sassy dudes over there. And not just sassy dudes, sassy front runners.
Sassy.
What a legendary description for this series. Man, let me tell you about this series. You know what this series is? Sassy.
Sassy.
It's a hell of a lot of sass going back and forth between these two teams. And it takes a different breed of cat to go with an eye gouge. You know, a cat with a hell of a lot of sass.
Sass.
Seriously, when you look at these Nuggets, what's the first thing you think of when you look at the Nuggets? That crew is sassy as hell.
Sassy.
It's not a crew you want to mess with because they will go. They will go and they will sass.
Sass.
They'll give you the hands and the sass.
Sass.
These are the kind of guys to say, tell me how my sass tastes.
Tell me how my
sass
tastes.
And if it sounds like I love that quote, it's because I do. I'm not even sure why I love it so much. Maybe because, I don't know, it's so freaking sassy.
Sassy.
Another reason why Seth Curry does not get the respect or the credit that he deserves. I mean, sure, it can't be easy being both Steph's brother and Dell's son, but damn, my man carries himself. And he deserves more respect than he's getting, considering what he does on both ends of the floor and what he means to the Blazers. And most of all, what he means to the rest of the planet when he brings the sass the way he does.
Sass.
Because sassy is an incredible word.
Sassy.
It's an amazing quote. So why don't you all get your sass in gear, because we got a game seven. I guess what I'm trying to say to you is gas, grass, and sass. No one rides for free.
Tell me how much
sass
tastes.
And if you're not down... If you're not down, either with a Game 7 or this take, you know what that is? That's you having it all sass backwards.
Sass.
My guest is Rockies manager, Bud Black. Bud, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, I'm well. Great to be on, my friend.
Good to have you, Bud. Really appreciate you. Boy, last night was something. You beat the Giants 12-11 yesterday, Bud, in a game that lasted nearly 4 hours, 23 runs, and a little bit of snow. How would you describe the entire experience yesterday at the ballpark?
Well, sort of a throwback classic Coors Field grinder, but my best memory of yesterday was a kid from El Toro High School in Orange County hitting a home run in the snow, Nolan Arenado. That was the smile on his face when he came in was great. But anyway, good game all the way around, obviously, when it ends in a win, but we need to pitch a little better, Jim.
But Black, my guest, I'm going to ask you about that rotation in a minute, Bud, but I'm glad you mentioned the kid from El Toro. Nolan Arenado had a monster game. I'll get to that in a second. But what he said, Bud, afterwards was, quote, the first at bat I was having trouble seeing. Luckily, I was able to barrel that one. It definitely was not fun out there. It was a long game. We wish we didn't have that long of a game in that type of weather, but it was a battle, end quote. So what's that say about your guys, Bud, that they got out to that early lead, San Francisco came back, and they still found a way to get it done?
Well, what I've noticed from this group the last couple of years, extremely resilient, great resolve, tough guys. You know, it starts with Nolan and Story and Blackman, and, you know, LeMayu was a part of that. Desmond, you know, a lot of the, you know, core players that we have are mentally tough guys. And, you know, I think playing in Colorado in altitude, you have to have that. I think it's sort of how these guys are built, which is great, which is a, you know, tribute to our player development system. Our minor league staff, and when these guys get to the big leagues, you know, they're ready. But proud of these guys in a lot of ways. You know, we're off to a slow start, but I suspect that, you know, as the season unfolds, the Rockies will be playing better baseball.
Rockies manager Bud Black back in the jungle. But one more thought about Nolan Arenado. He did reach base 5 times. He homered. It looked like he might have a second homer, but it was ruled foul. You know, every time you and I talk, I ask you if there's anything that he does that surprises you anymore. So let me ask you this instead. What do you know about Arenado that you think baseball fans should know about him in order to appreciate him even more?
Well, you know, I don't know whether I've told you this example, but when I first met Nolan, we went up to UC Irvine. This was the fall of 16, right after I got hired. We met, had lunch, and I told him I was going to come up in January, and we were going to work out. So I went to UC Irvine with Nolan on a couple weeks into the new year, and we're on the baseball diamond. He's taking batting practice with some college guys and a couple minor league players. Afterwards, he wanted to take some ground balls. So I'm thinking he's just going to take a few ground balls middle of January and, be done for the day. But Nolan took ground balls to his left, to his right. He was diving. He was charging slow rollers. It was like a spring training workout in the second week of January. So, his work ethic, both with the bat and with the gloves, is something I think people should know about. And when I saw him that first time workout, diving on the UC Irvine campus and trying to make plays, that told me a lot about this fellow.
That's such a great story, and not at all surprising. Bud Black joining us. You know, Bud, you mentioned that you didn't get off to the start you were looking for when you were 3-12, but then you ripped off 5 straight, and since then, you've gotten 14-8 overall. I mean, rarely is it one thing that changes the course of a season, but what's been the biggest difference between the first 15 games and the last 22 games?
Well, I think we got up to a real slow start offensively, and, that you wouldn't think that would happen with some of our guys. I mean, Nolan, I think, hit his first home run, a few weeks into the season, which was alarming. And, just overall offensively, we were scuffling, and that we weren't pitching great either. So, that tells me that, we still haven't hit our stride. I mean, Nolan's doing his thing now, but I think as a group collectively, we're not where we need to be offensively. And I think that will happen, but, 3-12 is rough. There's no doubt about it, but I think signs are pointing upwards now.
Bud Black, my guest. Now, Bud, you've been known to break out the Vegemite as a corrective tool during spring training. Did that come out at all during the first 15 games?
I usually try to do that in spring training. There are some there's some rare moments during the season where I'll do it, but it's more of a I love that. It's a correction device, the Vegemite in spring training for a lot of different things that go on in spring training. Not much usage during the season, but if somebody does something really stupid, I'll break it out.
It is the ultimate corrective tool. All right, so the rotation, Bud, had some issues last year, then turned it around in the second half. So although you're not where you want to be, you've been there before, but you said something recently that I thought was really interesting. You said, quote, when you're not on, there's a skill to not being bad. You sort of hang in there. What do you mean by that, and how do you develop that skill of not being bad and surviving the rough spots?
Yeah, what the message is if you're not pitching well in a certain game, you're a starting pitcher. There is a skill to be able to work through a game, minimize damage as best you can, and still, get the game into the fifth or sixth inning and not get knocked out in the second or third. There's a skill to that. It's sort of an intangible that I think can be taught if you have the right aptitude and the right makeup to never fold or never melt. And I think our guys are starting to understand that, the Marquezes and the Freelands and the Grays and Sensatella. I mean, these guys are starting to figure out that they might not be, that might not be their best day or their best stuff, but they can still pitch and pick up the bullpen and pick up the team the best they can. So there's something to that you watch good pitchers when they're not on, they can still hang in there and never fold.
We're talking to Bud Black. Now, Bud, when you first took that job in Colorado, the thinking around baseball is it's nearly impossible to have success there, let alone consistent success, because of the altitude. This is nothing new. Everybody talks about this. But you've taken that team to the postseason in back-to-back years for the first time ever. I know you're not going to make it about you, but how much pride is there in that accomplishment, especially since most think that it's just not possible there?
Well, I'm happy for the group. I'm happy for the organization. That's everybody in baseball ops, I think, has a part in this, from player development to scouting. But it's about the players, Jim. You got to have talent. And I think the last couple of years, we've put together a group that, we think is talented that can contend. And that's, from the other side, before I took this job, you know, watching Arenado, watching Story, Blackman, you know, Carlos Gonzalez, others, I thought that it was a group that could play, especially the position players. I didn't know much about the pitching, but I've been really encouraged by, you know, Freeland's growth, Marquez's growth, Sensatella, John Gray, and that's what it takes. I mean, to win, you have to pitch. You need solid starting pitching. That's the, I think, the heart and soul of the team. And if you don't have that, it's going to be awfully tough. And those guys the last couple of years have done a great job. So, I mean, hats off to, you know, our player development people on the pitching side, these pitchers who have done it. But I do think there's a mindset that, you know, goes with pitching here and coming in and out of altitude that I think our guys have. And we talk about it. You know, we talk about that. And there's no excuses as far as, you know, results. It's about really out-pitching the other team when we play here. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, some team's going to win and some team's going to lose. And some team's going to pitch a little better than the other. So I just say, hey, why not it be us?
Colorado playing good baseball right now. They beat San Francisco yesterday. They're back at home this evening to take on the Padres. He is the 2010 NL Manager of the Year, and he's got the Rockies in the postseason 2 years in a row. Good friend of the program, Bud Black, my guest. Buddy, great to run you down. Always good to have you on the show, Bud. Thank you very much.
You got it, Jim. Thanks. Always a pleasure. And hopefully down the line somewhere this year, you'll want to talk about Rocky baseball one more time.
You know it, Bud. You know it. Absolutely. You have my word. All right. So to call the Lakers a clown show engulfed in a dumpster fire on the back of a train wreck, I mean, that'd be like an insult. Two clown shows, dumpster fires, and train wrecks everywhere. And I really don't feel like getting on the wrong side of clown shows and dumpster fires and train wrecks, at least not today. See, the Lakers right now are in a far worse state than any of the disaster cliches that you could tag them with, especially since they shouldn't be. They're the Lakers. Don't they always say that? We're the Lakers. We're the Lakers. Nothing to see here. There's no problems. We're the Lakers. Yeah, they're the Lakers, and they've got LeBron James. So instead of resembling a competent franchise in market number two with the best player in the world, they resemble the Knicks. In fact, they're looking up at the Knicks. Just like the Knicks, they've taken a sad and pathetic turn. Specifically, a sad and pathetic turn towards 11th and Figueroa, just outside Staples Center in downtown LA, where today at noon, a fan protest has been scheduled. The protest has been put together or called for by just some dude who I don't even need to get into, really. This dude posted on Reddit yesterday, quote, "We will be holding a protest to garner ESPN media coverage and voice our displeasure of the Lakers front office. Jeannie Buss hates bad PR. She doesn't care about us, but she does care about what the media says. Bring Laker gear, bring your own chairs, and bring water," end quote. Then this guy continued in the post with a list of chants that he's hoping to start at the protest. Three of his ideas include the wildly creative "Sell the team," "Fire Rambis," "No Jason Kidd." And then somehow the protest jumped from Reddit to the mainstream media. One of the local radio stations here in town, AM 570, ran this guy down and asked him how many people that he expects to be at that rally today. And he responded confidently and proudly, if not arrogantly, with, quote, "We expect 60 to 80 people. You know, I think I speak for every concerned citizen of LA. Man, call the freaking SWAT team. Get the mayor on the blower. Barricade the streets. Strap on tactical gear. Fire up the choppers. Grab the tear gas. Because we got a situation a brewing. 60 to 80 people in the downtown area of the second biggest city in the country. Look out. Imagine how rattled Jeannie Buss must be, or how rattled she'll be when a group the size of a friends and family only wedding shows up outside of a building that's got like a million square feet. Now, if you think that's a bad look for the Lakers, and that it's a reflection of just how far that mighty franchise has fallen, then you're giving this alleged protest way too much credit. There is nothing more goofy. There is nothing more than a goofy little online petition, unfortunately, coming to life. That's what that is. I mean, more clones donated to Ira Craig's book publishing than the expected turnout for the so-called Laker protest. I mean, it's not a bad look for the Lakers. They obviously don't give a damn. It's a bad look for the 60 to 80 idiots who are going to gas a Friday afternoon by chanting, "Fire Rambis." And to who, man? Nobody in particular. The only way to truly change something that you do not like as a paying customer is, wait for it, stop paying. And no one dumb enough to show up for a Friday afternoon get-together outside of Staples is ever going to stop watching the Lakers. Because those are the honkiest of honks. They're the people who care a little too much. You want to know how you protest? You want to know how to protest in this case? You don't. You just stop going. You stop paying. You stop buying gear. And you hope enough other people do it too so you can affect the bottom line to the point where change has to be made. 60 to 80 dopes outside of Staples is the farthest thing from that. That's not changing anything at all. Hey, listen, I understand that it's been a while since anyone in LA has had a reason to congregate over the Lakers, but this is a town used to flipping cars and lighting them on fire during championships, not meeting up on some street corner to shout down Jason Kidd or Kurt Rambis. I mean, come on, man. Have a little self-respect. Too bad Jeannie Buss isn't James Dolan, because Dolan would walk right down from his office and ban every last one of these idiots for life.
For life. Life.
Now, don't get it twisted. I'm not saying the Laker fan does not have a reason to be upset. I'm saying that 60 to 80 people protesting on a Friday afternoon is the biggest waste of time I've ever heard of. These idiots are making the LeBron mural vandalizers look smart. Contractors can rely on Ferguson to provide a winning game plan for any job, any day. Thanks to their pro pickup service, you can choose from thousands of products to order online and pick up in store, which makes doing business with Ferguson the easiest part of your day. We are joined by Sam Amick. Sam, what's going on, man? How are you?
Romy, I'm doing great. You're accurate, my friend. I am busting my ass to get to this game. And shout out to friend and colleague Tim McMahon of ESPN is at the wheel. We are barreling down. Is this I-10? I-45.
I love it. I was going to say, Sam, I love that. I was going to say you've got two great stories up on The Athletic, which I will get to in a minute, but you are en route to Game 6 tonight. It has not been an easy trip. At one point yesterday, you were at the Albuquerque airport. So what's been going on? And tell me again where you are right now. How far off are you?
All right, so we're about 3 hours out of Houston. Albuquerque happened because as many years as I've traveled, I made a rookie mistake, and I took a flight from Oakland to Houston that was not nonstop, and by the time we landed in Albuquerque, the weather was so bad in Houston that they shut down the airport. And I'm not alone. There's a lot of media folks who got rerouted through different cities. So I ended up flying into Dallas. Tim happens to be based in Dallas, and so hence we're now driving buddies. But we'll get there. We gotta go see where this series is going to go.
All right, so let's talk about that too. Sam Amick joining us. In terms of the series itself, the two pieces that you have up right now on The Athletic, for instance, where were you, Sam, when Kevin Durant came up limping with 2:05 left in the third quarter on Wednesday night? And what was your initial reaction to the injury?
So I was on press row at Oracle, which is the top of the lower concourse, you know, so not close enough to really get a feel for it. But I mean, you know, pretty quickly thereafter, I decided to go down to the hallway and see what it looked like. Now, as you know, and everybody knows from watching it on TV, when Reggie Miller was thinking it was the worst, that it was going to be the Achilles. Whenever, you know, when you see a guy come up lame like that, non-contact, that whole thing where it looks like he got kicked in the back of the leg, that's what everybody's thinking. And then in the hallway down by the Warriors locker room, I mean, kind of like I wrote, there was a lot of panic, at least on the faces of different Warriors power players. I mean, Joe Lacob, the owner, came down there and was trying to figure out what was going on. The GM, Bob Myers, the rest of the Warriors group. It was a very, you know, really tense 16 minutes because nobody knew. And it looked like, for one, the Warriors are trying to hang on in that game and not go down 3-2. And then you've got this backdrop that everybody's aware of, that Kevin and his free agency, and not only that, but was this the last game at Oracle because they're moving to San Francisco next year? So a lot of layers to it, but it was pretty dramatic.
We're talking to Sam Amick. So you worked your way down there, and as you mentioned, you saw some of the biggest people in the organization. GM Bob Myers was there, the legendary Raymond Ritter, a couple of players, Joe Lacob. 9:31 p.m. Pacific, Lacob returns to his seats. Myers left shortly thereafter, as did the players. So, Sam, at that point, what did you think was going to be the news?
I was waiting for the verdict that it was the Achilles. I mean, that's where my head was at, because even – so one of the guys I wrote about, a guy named Chuck Terrell, is a Nike marketing pro basketball rep, and Kevin's, you know, kind of right-hand guy in the shoe industry for years. And I mean, you know, I was talking to Chuck in the hallway, and it was not encouraging. There was no information at that point, but the mood was down, and the mood was bracing for the worst. So I definitely thought that we were going to be talking about him, you know, having what is one of the worst injuries in pro sports.
We're talking to Sam Amick. So that was the fear. And then at 9:35 p.m., the team announces it's a calf strain. What was the reaction to that news?
Relief. And then, like, you know, from all involved on the Warriors side, and then certainly, you know, then kind of the pursuit of clarity happens, meaning, you know, calf strain is such a general term that, you know, we had to wait until the next day to get a better read on the timeline. And it's funny now because on the one hand, like the way I wrote it, you get the sense that there's that relief and they dodged a bullet. I mean, they obviously didn't completely dodge a bullet. For the purposes of this series, the outcome is the same as it relates to Kevin. He's not going to be part of this series. And I wouldn't be shocked. There's no guarantee that he's going to be available if they win, I think, in game one or game two of the conference finals. This is the type of injury that, you know, can take 7 days, can take weeks. You know, grade two would have been much worse. It appears to be a grade one. But, you know, they're not out of the woods just yet. But, again, independent of everything, I think you've got to be happy for Kevin first and foremost, because that is potentially a career-altering injury. It's so hard for guys to come back from the Achilles.
We're talking to Sam Amick. You know, Sam, when you look at the way they reacted, I mean, it's got to be really jarring to see your brother and your best player arguably go down the way he did, especially right in the middle of something like that. But then they step up, notably Steph Curry, who had 16 after Durant left the game, and they grind that thing out. However, it's one thing to survive 14 minutes without Kevin Durant. How do you think they deal with 48 minutes tonight without him, especially from a depth standpoint?
I feel like they're going to be in trouble tonight, and we'll see how it pans out. But, I mean, the combination of Houston being on its home floor, knowing that they absolutely blew a golden opportunity in those final 14 minutes to take advantage of the injury to Kevin. And I think for the Warriors, what's going to be challenging and probably just enough to send this thing back to a game seven is that it's just not easy in real time to figure out, you know, the new rhythm of your operation without somebody, you know, whose game is as incredible as Kevin's is. You know, Steve Kerr has got arguably the thinnest bench remaining in the playoffs. That's probably not even, you know, a debate whatsoever. And he's got to figure out his new rotations. Can I trust Andrew Bogut? Can I trust Sean Livingston? You know, is Alphonso McKinney going to give me anything? What am I going to do beyond my core three now? And, you know, that's where it gets tough, because the Rockets play well in that building. James Harden has got to know that it's time for him to redeem himself, because that was not a great look at all in the fourth quarter with, you know, his lack of aggression. So if we're handicapping this thing, I think it probably ends up going seven.
Sam Amick writes for The Athletic. He is en route to Houston right now. Sam, before you go, the thing about the Warriors is it's not just about tonight. Of course, it's about a really critical summer for them. You have a second great piece up where they are as a locker room and the futures of some of the players that are involved. How did Curry describe the vibe in the locker room and among the players right now compared to how it's been at points during the season?
So he called it great. You know, Kevon Looney, who I also spoke to for the piece, and I'm always a sucker for the role players who pay attention to this type of stuff. He's been there since 2015, and Kevon said right now that the locker room was as good as it's been all season. And I just think it's a little bit of an under-talked about part of their story right now, because back in November when they went sideways in that Clippers game and Kevin and Draymond were yelling at each other and it was so negative, we always thought that when we reached April and May that maybe they would fracture, maybe they wouldn't be getting along, maybe they would just basically decide that, you know, if Kevin is kind of heading for the exits anyway, then what are we fighting for? And it has not been the case. I mean, for them to show the kind of resolve that it took to pull that game five off speaks well to where they are as a group and Steph made it really clear that they're in a very good place. And he talked about how they're blocking out all the BS and all the headlines, you know, because now they know what's on the line. I mean, you know, three-peat opportunities are in short supply, and they know the history of the game, and they know what's at stake, and they're trying to not let that get away.
We're talking to Sam Amick for a few more moments. Sam, based on what you reported on, do you get the sense that the chance of Durant staying with Golden State may have actually increased recently? Is that the way you see that?
It is, yeah. I mean, I say that hesitantly because it's so hard to – we've been taking a pulse on this thing all the way through the year, right? And, I mean, in the one sense, Jim, we've had people all year long telling us that it's unofficially a wrap, that Kevin's going to New York, and so you definitely thought that was the case. But then, you know, we're only as good as what we're being told, right? And right now, I mean, I'm comfortable saying that there are definitely some people with the Warriors who just at least have a little bit of an uptick in their optimism that maybe he would think twice about leaving. And the root of that is the way they're getting along. It's even the idea that the fans, I do truly think that players in general care, you know, how the fans see them and how much love they get from the fans. And the Warrior fans, ironically, now have been down on Steph lately because he's been struggling. And in the end, maybe that ends up helping their cause when it comes to hold on to Kevin, because he's been getting love. People have appreciated his game in the Bay. They know what he's done for them. And I think they're starting to sense that if this dude leaves, this team is not going to be, you know, in nearly as good a spot as they were the last couple of years.
So one final thought on that same topic. You know, when you look at LeBron, he leaves the Cavs for the Lakers and the organization promptly implodes. Kyrie fights his way out of Cleveland, and his time in Boston has been a borderline disaster. Do you think there's any way that Durant would look at those two situations and think to himself, you know what, I've got a really good thing going here. I'm not going to change that up. It may not be worth it.
No, it's a great point, and it's funny, like a quick backdrop to that point, Jim. This column that you're talking about, the angle you just highlighted was my initial thought. I was going to go deep down that road, but I can't read Kevin's mind. So I don't know if that will impact his decision. I would, you know, if I was one of his advisors, I would definitely say that's a great idea to analyze and examine those other situations, because LeBron and Kyrie both, it's a little bit of a be careful what you wish for, grass is not always greener, whatever cliche you want to go with. It has not panned out like they wanted. Lakerland is an absolute dumpster fire right now, and Boston is not much better, and Kyrie has taken a ton of flack. So I say it all the time, it's a five-man game, even more than that. I mean, it takes 10, 12 guys. It's a team game, and if you don't have the right group around you, not only on the roster, but the GM, the owner, the culture, the environment, all of those things, then, you know, you're going to put yourself in a tough position as a star.
Roll that bad boy.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby.
Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had an amazing weekend. It is great to have you here. Great to be here. Lots to get done. Let's not waste any time. All right, so I had Friday off. I was in Wisconsin.
Freaking Madison, Wisconsin!
Do you remember when Omaha Beach had to be scratched from the Kentucky Derby? And it felt like maybe some of the buzz had gone from the Derby. Yeah, neither do I, because that was the craziest Derby ever.
Yeah! Maximum security!
Amazing. Except that was not the finish.
They did. So for the first time,
the stewards got that call right. If that happens on any other track, on any other day, it takes 2 minutes to decide. It's easy. That's a foul.
That's a foul!
Tim Layden is my guest.
People are going to be talking about this now for long after we're all gone, and not necessarily for all the right reasons, but that doesn't change the fact that the right thing was done.
Let's go to Matt in Portland.
I was just wondering if you think I should call my bookie and try and get my money back, because he told me to bet on Sarah Jessica Parker and Nancy Kerrigan, but those horses weren't in the race.
Take the rest of the day off, loser. As I mentioned, we were having a really responsible, mature discussion about thoroughbred racing. Until then.
Three in the air. Good! Kawhi Leonard.
Weirdo. You're a weird guy. He's just taking everything that the Sixers throw at him and dishing it right back, even colder. Ryan Hollins.
What the heck is going on, brother? How have you been?
Man, so good.
Jim, I've always been honest with you. I don't hold any punches. When you play in the NBA and in the playoffs, you have to assume in your mind before the game happens that you're screwed.
Magic just stepped down. And I'm like, man, get the
out
my face.
And now the face of the franchise is out here burying ex-employees and franchise legends on HBO a month later. 1 year down, three to go. Can't wait for next season. Car flags up.
I had an incredible story on Saturday that I've shared with many of my friends and family, and my sister said, you
you have to call Rome,
if you have to share this with everybody else.
I don't think you'll see another 8 for 22.
Guy was right. We didn't see another 8 for 22. That would have been an improvement.
Yeah, I should have shot 30.
Let that be a warning to every team looking at maxing out Kyrie this summer. Suns GM James Jones is my guest. What it's like to work with Robert Sarver.
They're not accurate. Like all things, play the game of telephone. You hear one thing, it becomes something else.
Dana White is my guest.
Conor McGregor's doing really well financially. And when you start doing really well financially, it definitely interferes with your fighting career.
Digger Phelps calling in on the call-in line.
I control my life now. No one's controlling me. So I have the freedom to choose, and I chose to watch you, and boy, what a gift this was today.
I know I got to do a better job.
Yes, Joel Embiid is a problem, but not as big as the rest of the guys that he's running with that are not picking him up. Hey, Jimmy, what's up, the big fella?
I'm not a doctor. I don't know.
Stupid doctor.
Ty Insege is my guest.
The kiss came when I got released from the Redskins.
What was that like?
I don't really want to talk down on an organization that gave me the opportunity. It was good for what it was worth.
If hearing Ty's story doesn't make you want to run through a wall, then I'm going to throw you out a window. AJ Hinch. Last week, you passed Art Howe for third place in the organization's all-time win list.
Passing a name that was recognizable for me and also very special to me as the first guy that pulled me in the office and said, hey, man, you're a big leaguer. You can imagine how cool that was for me.
Max Homa joining us.
Then I texted my coach, said, I think I'm going to throw up. He said, well, I'm having a beer, so you do you and I'll do me.
You know, if I wanted to be a fat, wrinkly, postmenopausal female, I'd rather be Caleb in Green Bay.
Our guys are giants.
Do the Splash Brothers. Get back to being the Splash Brothers.
Brother.
Is Kevin Durant really holding them back? You want the answer? I won't because I can't, and nobody else can either. There is no bottom line.
Bobby Ramos, bottom line.
Rip Hamilton is my guest.
Rome, always happy to be back on your show, brother.
So quit asking.
Robert thinks the War Eagle is badass. Wait till they come to your house and look up at a freaking dragon patrolling the Alabama skies.
Oh, I love it.
Email.
Alvin, why are you supporting a take that I was just going to ban a guy from the history of the show for sending?
For life.
I don't know, clones. I'll just say it one more time. There are a few ways I don't want to go. I don't want to be eaten alive by a shark. I don't want to burn to death.
Burning.
I really don't want to die in a plane crash.
Well, Kevin Durant's hurt.
And then I did exactly what he did. I'm looking around the backyard. I took a couple of steps. Somebody just kicked me in the calf.
Tell me how much.
Sass.
Bud Black.
And hopefully down the line somewhere this year, you'll want to talk about Rocky Baseball one more time.
You know it, bud.
Jim, if Beaks was in the rock band Led Zeppelin, their hit song Stairway to Heaven would be titled Stairway to Difficult.
Sure. I mean, does this dude live in Arkansas or Darfur?
You are a bust car, Jeff.
You can't keep Aqua Beach down because fat floats, you idiot.
Bro, it was a good call. It would be even a better call if you weren't trying to eat your phone. Terry Stotts, those logo threes.
Those are big momentum shots. Particularly in the playoffs, momentum is really important.
The Laker clown show.
Two water Gatorade.
Big breasts in studio spaghetti.
He's about to go up his ass.
We didn't do last
this
year.
This is a real dream for me. Pretty surreal.
You're welcome.
You little creep.
Resort chic.
Anti-culture.
Bob Baffert acts more like a horse's ass.
Jim, you've always been one of my favorites.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, I didn't even know that.
Good night now!
Let's go to Southfield. Jeff, what's going on? How are you?
Thanks for the vine, Jim. I have no comedy today. I just want to remind the clones that Sunday is Mother's Day. Jim, I love my mother dearly. That's why I've already gone to berries.com and ordered her some Sherry's Berries. I've had Sherry's Berries many times, and they are mouth-wateringly delicious. They absolutely burst with freshness. And clones, these are not normal-sized strawberries. They're huge. They're like the Beaks and Studio City of strawberries. They're beyond plump. These berries are flat out obese. And the rich chocolate they're dipped in melts in your mouth quicker than Big Daddy Beaks melts down on periscopes. Jim, I'm not saying Big Daddy B Cups is overweight. I'm just saying if Beaks was in the rock band Led Zeppelin, their hit song Stairway to Heaven would be titled Stairway to Difficult. Seriously, Jim, if baseball teams were named after Beaks, the Miami Marlins would be called the Miami Marlin Brandos. Just kidding, Beaks, but I'm not kidding when I say this Sunday, war all you mothers.
Rock him. Jeff in Southfield. Man, that's a weird dude. Weird's good, though, in that case. Stairway to Heaven would be Stairway Too Difficult. Let's go to Jeff in SoCal. What's going on, Jeff? How are you?
Rome, I'm great. Hey, I got to come in. Clones, lay off my man Beaks. He's not fat. He's thick. And, Jim, I'm more concerned about Nooch in that picture. I mean, does this dude live in Arkansas or Darfur? Do I need to start a sponsor, a clone program, Romy? Do we need to start sending Nooch those military-sized rations of rice to keep this man nourished? Dude, if Nooch turned sideways in that picture, we wouldn't have even seen him. But, Jim, I digress. I got an ATP question for you. How much damn money are you making for CBS that they have the cojones to televise 40 WNBA games this summer? Is this going to be like March Madness? Are they going to air these games on True TV, TNT, and TBS? If a Seattle Storm versus LA Sparks game goes into overtime, are they going to cut into it for a rerun of Big Bang Theory? Is Live PD going to interrupt a Chicago Sky versus Dallas Wings game if it runs late? I mean, what kind of deal do the sponsors get to advertise during these games, Rome? Was it like, pay for one commercial during WNBA season and we'll give you 5 free ones during NFL season? You know, commercials that people will actually see. And, I mean, Jim, this has disaster written all over it. And finally, Jim, in closing, seeing as it is smack-off season, and I know my bad boy jungle reputation has me persona non grata at this event, I'd just like to give you a quick tidbit of what you could expect from me if for some reason if you DM'd me a golden ticket. So, Jim, what do Brad and Corona and a G.I. Joe doll have in common? Well, they're both jacked, they're both completely hairless, and they both have no visible sign of a crank.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Oh, Beaks. The man of the hour. Beaks, man. What's up? How's your life, Beaks?
Hey, it's big, man. It's, you know, apparently there's a lot going on. But, dude, that was a sweet game of Jungle Jeopardy you got going yesterday. I know you can't keep up with all the shows behind the show, but when you asked what I was known for, about 90% of the JTP belted out Jacuzzi faster than James Holzhauer spewing correct answers at Alex Trebek. But, hey, man, in the jungle, you have to take the gloss given, right? Because when you play the game of clones, you either get lost or you fade away. But it could be worse, though, right? At least my origins didn't begin because there happened to be a hobo convention in Denver at the same time as a Ladies of the Night convention 28 years ago, Dan in Denver. You know who I really blame for all this, though, Jim? I blame Nooch. Yeah, thanks for coming out, Nooch. What's next, buddy? If we hang out again, will I end up on the cover of a plus-size Playgirl magazine? Great job, Chief. Let me tell y'all something a little about Lil Nooch. Dude is a sass hair taller than Frodo Baggins. Walking around Laguna with him felt like we were taking the One Ring to the fires of Mordor. And then on to you, clones. Yeah, sweet effort, guys, but come on. Can you not think Saturn was sweet meats and OB City not available? Was treats and Belly-O Gimme not available? Jesus, I haven't heard a clone. This dude named Puck took live video of himself at a Burger King drive-thru trying to order a Beaks in Studio City with cheese, only to end up with an angry Whopper. Jim, I ain't even joking. I've seen the video. Clones, you can't keep Aqua Beaks down because fat floats, you idiots. So expand your belt loose on my behalf, and let's finally put this to rest. Romy, Beaks ain't the correct cause for me, bro. Just so you know, they call me Studio City, in Studio City, out.
Beaks, doing his best to roll with it. He said it best. You can't keep Beaks down because fat floats in Laguna Beach. Left, brother, what's going on? How are you?
Not much, Jimmy. How you doing?
Good, bud. Good to hear your voice.
Listen, brother, June 21st, I'm going to be there. I also noticed it's National Bring Your Dog to Work Day. So, Tyler and Edmonton, don't forget to roll down the window for your girlfriend on your way to work. But, Jimmy, I got a question real quick about Brad's photo from last year. How does this guy have a 5 million megawatt power line running through his backyard, yet rocks a AAA battery in those bikini bottoms? Romy, the only power lines associated with Smack-Off 25 will be the lines I'm delivering. Meanwhile, Brad Smack-Off 25 is going to go just like his name is spelled, with a big D at the end.
All right, Left in Laguna, that's an RSVP. Left is in. The two-time champ is in.
Good night,